Hello and welcome to Indie Business Radio for October 19th, 2009. I'm your host, Donna Maria, and you have arrived at the one place where we empower you to enjoy your life, build your business, and have your way. Before we get started with today's guest, I'd like to announce something that I'm very excited about. It's IndieBusinessAdvocate.com. This is a brand new online community, a blog, of course, where small and independent business owners can connect and collaborate to develop strategies to inform and influence public policy where it concerns the laws that are being introduced in legislatures at the federal level and throughout this country that impact small and independent business owners. There are a whole lot of them out there right now. I am personally involved in six of them, and I know there are more, and that only counts the ones at the federal level. There's a lot of activity going on in terms of regulation of businesses, just like there always is. But today, unlike in years past, these regulations affect tiny, teeny businesses in ways that they've never affected them before, because many of these businesses did not exist before a few years ago. Because of the Internet, a lot of new people are able to enter markets these days that were not able to do so in years past, and these laws are affecting them, and sometimes they're being enacted without the knowledge of very small business owners. So IndieBusinessAdvocate.com is a community where we can inform each other and collaborate so that we can take our messages to Capitol Hill and state legislatures nationwide so that our voices as very small micro business owners can be heard. And, you know, one of the things that is such a challenge to starting a business these days is making sure that you're aware of these regulations. But in addition to that, we've always got regular business planning issues to deal with, just like large companies. Small businesses also have to take a look at very specific things in order to start a business, and that's where our guest today comes in. Her name is Christy Strzok, and she specializes in helping people create profitable businesses doing the work that they love. And you know how passionate I am about that. Her new book, Passion, Plan, and Profit, is 12 simple steps to convert your passion into a solid business. And one of the things that Christy specializes in is helping people plan their businesses and deal with financial issues when their inclination is to really hate numbers. And that would be me, actually. So, yeah, I'm excited to have you today. Welcome to Indie Business Radio.
Thanks, Donna Maria. I really appreciate being here.
If you're listening to the show on IndieBusinessRadio.com, just click on the Saber Chat link. That will take you straight into our chat room. Make sure your volume's turned up and you choose the player that works best for your computer. I'd love to have your questions for Christy. You can just post them in the chat room, and I'll make sure that we cover them during the show. So, Christy, small business. There's a lot of books out there on small business today. A lot of them deal with financial issues and turning your passion into a profit. Tell us a little bit about you and why you thought there was a need for this book.
It's interesting that you ask about whether there was a need for the book or not, because I actually sort of did this backwards, and I'm guessing a lot of the IBN members are the same way. I started writing this book because I felt this huge pull to do it. I have to say that I definitely know a lot of small business owners who don't like to do business plans. I mean, that's pretty much 90% of us, and that who are afraid of their numbers. But beyond that, I started writing because I just felt this need to write this book. And I think that's true for a lot of people, that they start their businesses first because they feel such a pull to do the work, and then we wake up later and realize, gee, I've got a business here, or maybe I want to have a business here. What do I do to make this a profitable business that can actually support me as opposed to a hobby?
I love that you said that. It's like one day you wake up and go, gee, you know, I'm making money here. What can I do to formalize this?
Exactly. That's pretty much what I did. I was pulled to the work first and then realized I needed to make it more, perhaps more structured and more, quote-unquote, business-like.
So, Christy, once you do, you know, you're doing your passion, and one day you look up, or I had a friend of mine tell me that, you know, one day her husband just went into the bank account and was like, where's all this money coming from? And, you know, well, I've been selling my handmade soaps. And he sort of took notice and went, okay, well, you know, how can I help with that?
Yeah, really.
Because it was making a big difference. So what do you do when you're in that position? What is the first thing that you do?
There's two things you need to do when you find yourself in that position. You have to make a decision about whether you actually really do want it to be a business. A lot of people, I'm not one of them, I turned out to really, really want this to be a business, but a lot of people do these activities, you know, especially handcrafted work, because it is a hobby, because they want to do it when they feel like doing it, where they feel like doing it, and if they decide they don't want to do it right then, they can put it down and stop. So you have to take a look at yourself and decide whether you want to make this thing that maybe started out as a hobby into a real business. I was thinking about this morning, that it's the difference between deciding whether you want to be single or get married. You know, when you're single, if you don't feel like doing something, you don't do it. And when you have a hobby, if you don't feel like messing around with it that day, you don't do it. But when you're married, if your spouse decides that he or she wants to go do something or you want to change something in the house, you have to participate. You can't just say you're not in the mood. So the first question to ask yourself is, do I want this to be a hobby still, or do I want to really commit to it like I would commit to a relationship or a marriage? And then the second step involves numbers. It doesn't involve really complex numbers. In fact, I hope we talk about this a little, because I know that lots and lots of small business owners' bugaboo is numbers. You have to do a little arithmetic to see if what you're selling can be sold in large enough quantities that would make you prosperous, you know, an adequate living. If it takes you 30 hours to do your aromatherapy starter kit, you better be able to sell that thing for $1,000 in order for it to make enough money. So you have to sit down and actually take a look at your numbers, and it's not complicated to do. You just have to do it.
So why do people struggle with that? I mean, that sounds pretty simple. I want to share this little story. My mom is a fabulous seamstress, and when I was younger, I was like, you know, Mom, you can make so much money selling these quilts. And she said to me, well, you know, but I have too much fun doing it to do that.
Right. Right. That's a great example.
That kind of goes to your point number one, right?
Mm-hmm. It does. It totally does. If you want to do what you want to do with your soap and your cosmetics or whatever it is you're making, any kind of fine art or anything like that, or writing for that matter, or coaching or anything, and you just want to not be bound to it and just do it whenever you feel like it, then you need to keep it a hobby.
You decide whether you want to really do this outside of the hobby arena, and then you look at whether you can make a profit. That sounds pretty simple. So why is it that people struggle so much with this?
I think I was thinking about this, too, because I'm just like everybody else. I struggled with it as well, and I think that's one reason why I ended up writing a book about it. I think there's two reasons why people struggle. One is, I think we think this business number stuff, you know, in order to understand your business numbers, you had to have been graced by birth or something. You know, you had to have been born understanding business numbers, and that's completely false. The things you need to understand business numbers are the things you learned in third grade arithmetic, which is basically addition, subtraction, multiplication, and division. It's not complicated, and I think there's an aura around it. You know, I mean, there's a whole newspaper, the Wall Street Journal, dedicated to business numbers every day, and it's really small print, and it looks scary, and, you know, our initial inclination is to just avoid that. And the second reason, I think, is because the numbers, well, I should say, I guess, for myself, but I've also seen this in a lot of my coaching clients, is that if you're not making money, if we started out doing this work that we absolutely, absolutely adore, and we're not making enough money at it, it can feel like sort of a personal attack on our self-worth. And if looking at your business numbers gives you a shame attack, then you're going to avoid it at all costs.
Right.
But I think those two things can be overcome easily, fairly easily, and that when we get really clear in our minds that our business numbers and what we're selling is not a referendum on our worth as human beings, then it's a lot easier to look.
So where do we start when we, I love that shame attack, where do we start to fight back the shame attack or avoid it entirely at the beginning of our venture, when obviously is the time when we can make the most difference?
Yeah. I like to get help. You know, that's an underhanded pitch for coaching, but it isn't. There's lots and lots of coaches out there besides me. I like to do things with other people, especially in business. You know, having your own business can be the most rewarding. I mean, I know I'm preaching to the choir here, especially you, Donna Maria. It can be one of the most rewarding things in the world, and it's also super challenging. There's a lot of things that you can't control your outcomes. You can only control your footwork. So be really clear that, you know, that this is not, your business success or failure is not a referendum on your worth as a human being. It helps to get to be with other business owners because we get to talk and share about the challenges we face and realize that we are not alone. I think that's probably the underlying message of your entire network here, Donna Maria, is that we're not alone. Everybody is facing a lot of the same problems we're facing, and when you find that out, it's so much easier to go forward.
So it is one of the things you're saying that, of course, there are coaches like you that are available, professionals who are professionals at coaching in particular areas, but you're saying even before that, just connecting ourselves with other people who are dealing with the same issues can in and of itself begin to bridge the gap.
Absolutely. Your network, you know, the Indie Business Network, is a perfect place to start, especially for people who are doing the kind of work that all the other people on the network are already doing. There's so much information out there. I mean, the Internet is such a huge blessing in that way. You can really find out and cut down your learning curve and cut down the number of mistakes you're making by talking to other people. Plus, it's a lot more fun.
Yeah, it does make it a lot more fun. Okay, so now we've sort of overcome at least any initial objection. So what do we do first? Do we get an accountant? Do we look at our money? What do we do?
First thing to do, especially if you sort of wake up one day and find out you sort of have a business going already, is to go out and really understand your customers.
Okay.
There are more radio interviews on the Indie Business Network that talk about this too. The guy last week, Shel Israel, that was talking about Twitter, was talking about not just thinking of the people that buy from us as customers, but thinking of them as our community. That's the thing that is so awesome about having a small business, is that the people who buy from you are your community. You can actually build a community around your business. So that's the first step, is go out and talk to the people that have started to buy your products and services and find out about them. Find out what they like about what you're doing and what they'd like you to change. And also find out about them as people, so you can get a kind of a picture of what other customers might look like and where you can find them. Because if you're going to turn it from a hobby to a business, you need to be clear about who your community is. You know, who are these people and what they're interested in and how to find more of them.
And I suppose if you've already started making some sales, then you really already have a community. You just need to build on it.
Exactly. Yeah, that's the beauty about even making one or two sales. You have a place to start where you can talk to people about what they like and don't like about what you're doing.
Yeah, and I think sometimes, what do you think about this? I think sometimes what happens is people start, it's a hobby, they start making a little bit of money, then they go, okay, there's these few people that are buying my stuff, now I got to go deal with them, and now I have to do that and continue to make the products. And they kind of get stuck, really, I guess, with managing those two priorities as they're also learning about, you know, going down to the local tax office and filing whatever form they have to file.
Yeah, that's really, really true. You know, that's the upside and the downside of being in small business, is you have to, this is a terrible cliche, but you have to wear many hats.
Yeah.
And you have to like hats, lots and lots of them.
Right, but we can break this down, though, right, because it's not like, there may be different things to do, but it's not like there's so many that they can't all get done. You just kind of have to break it out, a piece of paper, and make a list and start checking stuff off.
Exactly. Yeah, because it isn't that it can't be done, because it can be done. You know, millions of people are doing it every day, and more people are starting up. It absolutely can be done. It's what you're talking about there is that border between deciding whether it's going to be a hobby or a real business or not. Because if it is going to be a real business, then you'll have to figure out exactly what each hat looks like. And you don't necessarily have to do every hat either. You just have to have somebody do it. You know, there are certain things we're each of us really good at and each of us are really not good at. And the more of the things that you can get help with that you're not good at, the more successful you'll be.
It's such great advice, Christy. And we really, I'm just determined, and I hear it in your voice too, to make sure that as few people fall into that, this sort, it's almost like a no man's land when you...
It is.
You've been a hobby for a while, and then suddenly it's a business, and you know your hobby inside and out because you've been doing it for however long, and you can't stop thinking about it. Keeps you up all night. And then suddenly you have to turn yourself really into a new a person that's knowledgeable about other things. And
yeah,
not that's it's a process, and so we have to kind of take a deep breath and accept that. And Christy's book is a great tool that you can use to help you do this. And we're going to come back and talk more with her about how to roll up our sleeves and embrace these new roles, particularly where numbers are concerned, when we come back right here on IndieBusinessRadio.com. We'll be right back.
Why is everyone listening to GlobalTalkRadio.com? Because it's the future of talk radio. Every day, more and more people are finding internet radio as not just an alternative media, but as a replacement to traditional AM and FM broadcast stations. Internet radio offers a wider variety of programs, convenient on-demand listening that meets your schedule, and fewer commercial interruptions. And GlobalTalkRadio.com is already leading the way by matching this content with a highly targeted internet audience. GlobalTalkRadio.com offers its listeners one of the widest programming varieties on the internet, from business and finance to self-improvement, paranormal, health, literature, romance, politics, and more. There are also opportunities for prospective hosts who would like to host their own weekly or one-time talk shows. Want to learn more? Check us out at www.globaltalkradio.com and see the future of talk radio today.
Welcome back to Indie Business Radio. We're here today with Christy Strzok, author of Passion, Plan, Profit, 12 Simple Steps to Convert Your Passion into a Solid Business. And we're going to talk this segment about some questions that I get frequently, Christy, and I know you do as well. I want to hear what you think about the fact that there are so many businesses starting today, and for a person that's just starting out, sometimes they may ask, you know, well, so what's the point? Why should I even bother with this? There's already a million people doing this. What do you say to people like that who think that that may be a reason not to go into business for themselves?
I totally disagree that there are too many small businesses out there. I think that this actually sort of goes back to a spiritual belief I have that everybody has instilled in them something that they're really good at. That's their, I'm not a Buddhist, but it's called in Buddhism, it's called right livelihood, a thing that you do really well. And that doesn't mean everybody should have a small business, but if you are one of the people who's been endowed with a thing, with a skill that translates itself into a small business, it's hard to, it's hard to resist not going into the business and doing the work. And B, I think there is a natural market for the things that we do well out there. You know, I know that there are lots and lots, maybe thousands and thousands and thousands of people who are making custom organic soaps and cosmetics and lotions. I know there are tens of thousands of people, but that doesn't mean that you can't do it too. There are plenty of people who use those products, and with your specific bent on them, it's possible to succeed.
Well, and certainly there was lots of coffee around before Starbucks. So
no kidding. Exactly. That is a great example.
So what do you do to, you know, let's just say you have a full-time job or even a part-time job, and you never really considered entrepreneurship. You just love what you do. Suddenly you're sort of like, maybe I can do this. Do you recommend that people stay in that job while they start, or what do you recommend people consider when they're making that decision?
It depends on how much stress you can handle or how much stress you want to handle. If you're a single mom and you've got two kids, and it would stress you horribly, as it would me, if you didn't know where your next meal was coming from, I mean, I'm exaggerating this to make a point, then it makes sense not to give up your day job at the beginning, that you need to ease into this carefully. You know, some people who are single and who don't have high expenses can potentially afford, and maybe who have some savings, can afford to just plunge straight into the business. And there's definitely something to be said for being able to focus all your attention on your business versus having to split it between your job and your business. But it can be, you know, as I speak from experience, and hopefully, Donna Maria, you don't speak from experience, but it can be extremely stressful if you are in a business that's not making enough money. And it takes a while, and the truth is it does take a while to ramp up a business so that it can make a living for you. So it's a personal decision based on how comfortable you feel with your financial foundation before you start. You know, you don't want to endanger your family's finances by chucking everything out the window and starting your business from scratch on day one, because that just doesn't really make sense. But at the same time, if you can give yourself a financial foundation before you start, you know, if you've got some savings that you can live on, it's also really hard, and I speak from experience here, to focus on doing your business when there is a lot of financial pressure. It's hard to be creative and, you know, relaxed and think up new products and ways to talk to your community when you're really stressed financially.
And, you know, it's interesting. One of the things that your book has is, and this is a workbook, too, by the way, so it's got some great information in it, but it also, you've got some charts in here, and one of them that I find the most interesting and perhaps most useful for people starting out is an income calculator that helps you calculate the cost of the things that you're making and how much you're going to sell them for. Tell us a little bit generally about how that flow chart works for each individual product you sell.
That's the place where you, and this is, I'm glad you asked that question, because that, hearkening back to a question more in the beginning, what do you need to do to help you make the decision between whether to keep it as a hobby or make it into a business, is figuring out what the income from your business is going to be from your products and services. So that workbook, or that worksheet actually, takes you through listing all your products and what you sell them for and how many you think you're going to sell and then what all your expenses are, including the things that we don't think about, like our own salaries and, you know, computer expense and all that other stuff, and takes you through the very simple math, which is basically attraction, subtraction, and addition, to calculate whether or not you can sell enough of what you make at the prices that you're currently charging to make a prosperous living or not.
Christy, one of the things I noticed, and tell me what you think about this too, is that a lot of times by the time someone gets to the point where they're ready to roll up their sleeves, as you're suggesting, they have so many products in their line that it's not like they sell, you know, three types of soap, and they can pull out your chart and do three charts. They've got so many things going on because they're so excited, and they're faced with, well, gee, if I do that, I have to do it for like 50,000 products.
Yeah.
So, you know, you have any suggestions for people in that position as they're transitioning from having 50,000 products and making stuff that they just love to making it a business and, I guess, disciplining themselves to pull back some?
Yeah, there's two things to do there. The first thing is to go out and talk to your community. Go talk to your customers and find out what they like and don't like. There's this rule, which doesn't always hold true, but a lot of times it does. It's called the 80-20 rule. You're probably making 80% of your money from 20% of your products, and you need to figure out what 20% of the products those are. And you can go out and talk to your customers and figure that out, what they're really liking and not liking. And you can also look at your numbers. You just look at how much of each thing you sell and see what's most popular. Now, the other thing you can do if you are having 50,000 products, you know, that's tough, and I'm definitely not recommending that. But if there's some things, like you really, really feel like you need to have a big selection, and to do your numbers and figure out what your income is, you can group your products into groups by price or maybe by type, but it's easier to do it by price. so that it's not so complex in the beginning and you don't get freaked out having to do, you know, 50,000 different calculations to figure out your income. So either figure out what your the 20% of your products are that are the most popular, that are bringing you the most money, or group them.
And when you say group them, you don't mean by type. You mean by price?
I do mean by price. Yeah, I shouldn't have said by type. Group
no,
them by
no,
price.
You did say by price, but I just wanted to highlight that because I think instinctively we kind of think, okay, I want to put the lotions over here and the this kind of product over here. Tell us why you group it by price.
It's easier to, it's a lot easier, because, so let's take lotions, for instance. Maybe you sell a certain kind of lotion for $10 and another kind of lotion for $150, I hope. It wouldn't make sense to group those two things together, because when you calculated how many of those things you needed to sell, they're so far apart in price, the arithmetic wouldn't make sense. You'd group all the products that sell for $5 together and group the other products that sell for $25 together like that.
Okay.
That makes, that'll give you information that's more meaningful.
Good. Okay. And so do you also pay attention to the particular profit margin? Because especially when it comes to bath and body products, so many things can be labor-intensive, but yet so many things can be made very quickly, and they can sell for a little bit more than the labor-intensive product.
Yes, yes. You know, this is. I wish I had a whiteboard while I was talking right now, because that's actually the other piece. I'm glad you asked that, because it isn't just that you group everything that sells for $5. You also need to take into consideration how much each thing costs, too. The real way to group things is by what they would call gross profit, which is the sale price minus the cost of the thing. So if you're selling a bath product for $10 and it costs, God willing, $2, you would group all the products together like that you were making a gross profit on of $8. Is that too complicated? Does that make sense?
No, it makes perfect sense, and what you're doing is you're separating everything out so you can know where your money's coming from.
Yes, yeah, that's one of the things that happens when people are making things with their hands. It's so much fun. You can get distracted by how much fun it is and lose track of the fact that some stuff is really labor-intensive, and your time is a cost of goods sold, even though it's not an actual cost. You know, you can't sell something for $10 that takes you 10 hours to make. I'm, you know, exaggerating to make a point.
Yeah, no, that's a really good point. And, you know, I want you to comment on this, too. I had a conversation over the weekend with someone who, she makes bath and body products, and a potential wholesale customer, came along and said, well, these are great products, and I want to buy some, but I need some labels. And I don't know how to do that, and I don't have anybody to do them for me. So this person is actually looking for help from someone who can help her learn how to do labels for this customer. And it's a conundrum to some extent, Christy, because she wants that customer, and I think the fear is that she'll lose the customer if she can't also provide the label. Can you help people in that position analyze whether they should do something like that when it's not really their line of business?
Yeah, that's a great example. That's a place where, especially in the indie business community, you can find somebody to help you. And you actually, this is why and where it's a great thing to start getting familiar with your numbers. You can figure out then how much time and what the cost is of doing these special labels, and then figure out how much more product you think you'll sell to this new customer based on the cost, you know, the additional cost of having to do these custom labels for them. And the numbers will tell you. I mean, you do have to make up a little bit or do some forecasting about how much more product you think you might sell to this new customer. But the numbers, you know, with a decently educated guess about how much more you might sell to this customer, you can figure out whether this makes sense for you or not. You know, that leads into another thing about sometimes it feels like any customer that walks in the door, we absolutely have to say yes to them. And sometimes we have to say no.
But that's so hard.
Oh.
It is. but you know, and sometimes, you know, what sometimes the reality is, maybe, Christy, that we all hear that, and then we go do it anyway, and we just learn the hard way.
Yep. I used to own a computer business, which was not my right livelihood, and I took a customer one time that I knew was wrong at the beginning, and I was feeling desperate for money, which is the thing we don't like and don't want to get into the position of feeling. And so I said yes to this customer, and it ended up costing me $5,000. I had to, because it was the wrong customer, and we ran into a lot of problems, which I knew would happen. I ended up having to pay them $5,000. And I'll never forget that. So I always say no if it's the wrong fit, because there's somebody else out there that's better for them and for me.
Yeah, sometimes that's the case. And I guess that's one of the benefits closing about being connected in a community, because you will probably find that out if that's the case and have someone naturally to refer that person to.
Absolutely.
Well, this is really great information, and we're going to come back after our next break, Christy, and we're going to pick your brain about where to get money to start.
Where
does the cash come from? We all and we always need more than we think we're going to need, so we're going to talk with you about where to get the money. Show me the money, Christy, right after our next break here on Indie Business Radio. I'm your host, Donna Maria. We'll be right back.
Want to stay on top of what's new in the radio industry? Sign up for a free subscription to the Future of Talk Radio, available exclusively to listeners of globaltalkradio.com, and find out what's new in the world of online radio. Listeners can find out about new shows and special guests. People with something special to offer can find out how to become a guest and how to prepare for an interview. And prospective hosts will find a valuable resource for everything from planning their new program to selecting topics and guests, recouping expenses by selling advertising, and more. Sign up today for your free subscription to the Future of Talk Radio by visiting www.globaltalkradio.com and learn about the future of talk radio today.
Indie Business Radio. We're here with Christy Strock, author of Passion, Plan, Profit, 12 Simple Steps to Convert Your Passion into a Solid Business. Breaking it down into 12 simple steps, you're like a hero for a lot of people who are in this position. And I want to mention that this book, while there's a lot of text in here, there are also some really great modules and worksheets, which are really helpful for anyone, whether you have a product or a service, who kind of wants to really break things down and maximize every dollar that they have. And speaking of dollars, Christy, where do you go to get money? There's a list of places where we can go. Let's look at them one by one and tell me what you think about them, what's the viability of doing those things today. Where are people getting money to start their businesses? How do other people do it?
Oh, the sad fact is it's really hard to get money to start your business. And I'm maybe a contrarian. I don't like credit cards or loans because I think they make, well, two reasons. I got in trouble with credit cards, and so now I don't have a credit card by choice. I pay cash for everything. And I think that getting money per se can divert you from looking at the things you really, really need to pay attention to. I've been in a situation, both situations, where I had lots of money to spend and when I didn't have very much money to spend. And I was a heck of a lot more focused on my business when I didn't have money to spend. I really examined every purchase before making it because I knew money was a limited commodity. Now, I know that we're talking to a group of business owners who have to buy product, and that's different. You know, I sell services, so I don't have to lay out the money in advance. I really encourage people not to borrow any money at the beginning. You know, you need to do some stuff with the way you manage your cash, like don't ever give anybody terms. You know, they need to pay you when you deliver the product.
Okay.
So that you're not acting like a bank, because you're not a bank. And you do need, you know, if, when you're selling a product, you need a little bit of seed money to buy your materials at first. And the other thing that you really have to focus hard on, which is the thing that we have a hard time with in small businesses, and that's pricing things right. We tend to underprice really badly and don't take into consideration all the things that need to be paid for, including our own salaries, when we price our goods. So that's another reason to really take a look at the arithmetic behind your pricing before you start selling things and feeling like, oh, you know, I want to say this one thing, too. The stuff that we're really good at, you guys are all out there making bath and body products, and I'm coaching, and Donna Maria has started this awesome network. These things we're doing feel really easy to us, not always, but a lot of the time. And so we think it's easy for everybody else, but it's not. The stuff that you're doing that's feeling really easy to you is actually your gifted area, the part, you know, your right livelihood. And because it feels easy, you tend to underprice it. And not having money sloshing around makes us focus hard on what stuff needs to be priced at so that it makes a profitable living and still, you know, answers our customers' problems.
Those are some really good points all in one little section there. I love especially that you said your small business is not a bank. And, you know, Christy, can we focus a little bit more on the distinction between selling products and services where this is concerned? Because I think this is really key, and a lot of times we see, you know, how to start your business and how to be profitable and successful, and a lot of it is directed at people that are selling services like you just described. Help people who are selling products understand how to, I guess, really make the most of the inventory of ingredients and supplies that they have on hand at the very beginning.
Yeah, you know, that's actually can be sort of a complex issue, in some ways way more complicated than your numbers, is that you need to be really focused on when you buy your raw materials, basically, to make your product. You have to do some thinking, and this is why I like not having money at the beginning. It forces you to really think about, what am I going to buy for my quote-unquote raw materials here? I mean, it can make it sound like a mining operation or something, which it's not, but what am I going to buy that I can make into the products that are the best sellers or the ones that I can have higher prices for? You really have to do some thinking. You have to do some footwork in the beginning about what you buy so that you know, if you're buying a certain kind of ingredient, that you make sure you can use 100% of it. I mean, this sounds like sort of a stupid lecture here that everybody knows that you have to do this, but planning it in the beginning of, you know, I've got to buy these five ingredients to make my products that sell the most, and I'm going to use all of them. It takes some old-fashioned, you know, there's no magic. It takes some old-fashioned planning at the beginning. And you do have to have startup money. It's the truth. You do
have to have a little bit of startup money. I guess it's going to vary from business to business. Jennifer Kirkwood in the chat room on Twitter at La Dolce Diva, Christy, makes a good point. She talks about how challenging it can be for product manufacturers to sell to retailers if they require, particularly for an opening order, 100% of the payment in advance. There's a lot of retailers, you know, they sell the product and they pay you out of the money that they make from their customers. So how do you, you know, respond to that and, you know, try and get that business without, you know, tanking yourself?
Yeah. So you do have to have some money to carry that inventory until the retailer pays you. And the reason I'm sort of different than most people because of my personal history of getting in trouble with debt. And so I have a rule for myself that I don't have any unsecured debt. So I realize that if I have to front the money for the product and then the retailer's not going to pay me for 30 or 60 days, that I somehow have to be able to finance all that during that time. And so I would figure out a way to make that a secured, I want to be really clear how that money that I'm going to borrow or use is going to get paid back when the product gets paid for. Because that's the part, it's hard to get a credit card these days, although probably everybody except me has one, and hopefully you've been better than I was in the past, and you've managed your credit, and you didn't run up your credit cards to the max.
So in other words, you're saying that you get a promise from the retailer to pay you within 30 days, but you have to have a plan for if that doesn't happen.
Exactly. And you also, you know, obviously, I guess, everybody does this, or we're hoping that we all do this, is that it's all in writing, and you have recourse if they don't pay. You actually have to have a plan for if they what happens when they do pay and what happens if they don't pay. Because when you borrow money is the tendency is, okay, I borrowed $10,000 and I spent $5,000 of it on product, and I'm holding the other $5,000 back for more product. And then the internet cable bill comes due, and the money ends up getting frittered away instead of being set aside to buy more product. And that's where the risk comes in when you borrow money, is that you got to make sure that there is a plan, a realistic plan, to pay it back every time, or you're just getting more and more and more and more debt.
Right. Okay. So these are all sort of culminating in reasons to do this sort of planning work that you're talking about on the front end, or at a minimum, as soon as you decide you're going to think about moving your hobby to a business.
Yes.
And also making sure that you assess your products, particularly if you're selling product services as well, but making sure that you don't have so many things to offer that you can't keep up with all these kinds of issues.
Yeah.
Okay, so this is good. So, of course, we've all been, affected, both business owners and not, with the current credit crisis. It's hard to get a credit card, as you said, but obviously, you know, it's not like it's impossible, so you can still do it. What are some of the things that you look at when you're deciding, you know, can I really pay this back? I mean, help us take off our rose-colored glasses, because, you know, we really want to say we can pay it back.
Yeah, absolutely. We do all think we can pay it back. I think that goes back to the question you asked me before the break, where before you get too deeply into this, that you need to look at go through the worksheet in my book, or, you know, just with a piece of paper and a pencil, and write out what your income is, and then really, 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 truly look at what all your expenses are. We do have the old rose-colored glasses, and, you know, that's a good thing about us as small business owners, too. It sort of cuts both ways. It makes us big optimists, and it also sometimes makes it so we don't look at the whole picture. So when you're looking at the whole picture in your income, that you have to really look at all the expenses, including taxes, God forbid, you know, and a savings account where you put money aside every month for your business, so that when you look at your pricing and you look at what your pricing things at, that you take into consideration all the costs, all the ones, you know, like the obvious ones like the packaging and the labels and things like that, and shipping, and all the ones that you don't think about necessarily, office supplies, internet connection, utilities, savings account, your salary, taxes, that sort of thing.
We had a guest on the show not too long ago, Sormana Mitra, who talked about bootstrapping a business and how, as you just mentioned, being required to do that, that is not having any outside financing or investors or loans or anything, really forces you to be creative in a way, she said, that actually ultimately makes your business more successful. Can you comment on that?
I totally, totally agree with that. You know, and especially, I mean, I have direct personal experience. Even knowing in the situation that I had where I had a lot of money to, quote-unquote, play around with, and I use those words exactly precisely for a reason, I wasn't as focused on the numbers and on being creative in financing the business because I didn't have to be. It sharpens your brain in a very creative way when you don't have a lot of money to play around with. It makes you look at ways that you can finance things that are not necessarily not a credit card or not a loan or you know, no, not a grant, which don't actually exist in reality anyway.
Yeah, I got a lot of people asking about grants for for-profit businesses, which is an interesting question in and of itself. But so we are moving from hobby to business owner. We're embracing all of these financial issues that we have to embrace. What do we do when we get to the point, Christy, where we've kind of got all our T's crossed and, you know, we've filed, you know, we've taken care of, you know, the basic stuff. You know, you have to separate your business from your personal accounts and things, which is, you know, makes it so much easier to run a business and know how much money you have. So what do you do, Christy, when you've gotten to the point where you, you know, have pinpointed some weaknesses? Maybe you do have too many products in your line. That's a really good example. A lot of people experience that. And, you know, you've got 50 products in your line. You realize, as you said, applying the 80-20 rule, that only 20% of them are actually making you money. What are your tips for going back to your customer base and making these kinds of changes that have to be made, you know, when if you don't, you're just not going to be profitable?
The best way to stay profitable, besides paying attention to your numbers, is really loving up your customers. And having a way to do that that is, I guess, systemized. You know, love and systems don't necessarily go together very well in the same sentence. But you can, if you, when you go out to talk to your customers, and I really encourage people to do this regularly, that you ask them how they want you to communicate with them. Some people may want you to talk to them through an email newsletter, or maybe they want you to blog, or maybe they want you to have radio shows once a week like you do, Donna Maria. And you really, really focus on the community, your community of customers. That is maybe the most, I mean, we can't let our numbers get out of control and all that stuff, but the most important thing is really listening to what your customers want and responding. You know, that if they tell you things, you have to either tell them why you're not going to act on it, or you have to act on it. And as people, it's sort of a, it's an issue of integrity in a way. You know, if you really are dedicated to serving your customers, they'll know it by the way you talk to them and what you do with the information they give you. So I guess the, you know, business always seems so business-like, and we're not supposed to talk about spirituality or love or anything like that, but in some ways, especially small businesses like this, and I don't like the idea of it being a labor of love, because that sounds like you're not getting paid, and I don't want it to be like that, and I don't think it has to be like that, but this is sort of a love thing in a way. You know, this work that we do, we love so much, and our customers, the stuff that we're selling to them, they love, and it's in a way, it's a sacred thing that we want to keep nurturing and keep building on and keep talking and keep building this community with our customers.
So in some ways, you're saying that the answer to the dilemma in the question I posed brings us full circle to what you do at the very beginning, which is reach out and figure out how best to communicate with the people that are already buying your products.
Yeah. Exactly. That it all boils
down
to.
And so it's like, you know, you're always marketing, and certainly it's true. I think that the digital tools that we have available to us make it easy for us to just be marketing all the time. And so frequently, would you say that a lot of times when you're out there, then your customer, you don't even have to ask your customers what they want, because if they have lots of ways to communicate with you, they'll just tell you.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and you know the word, I don't know if people in the Indie Business Network feel like this, but the word marketing sort of sounds like I'm going to talk to you so much and so often and so hard that you're going to keel over and give up and buy something just because you can't stand to hear me anymore. I have this friend who's an attorney, and her marketing consists of visiting. She goes around and visits with her customers. And when she does that, she gets more business. And I love the idea of marketing being the same thing as visiting. And so marketing can be all kinds of things. You know, it can be educating. That's a opportunity for indie business owners in a big way. You know, especially if you're doing bath and body products, you can really educate your community on why one thing's better than another and why you need to use this and why this is good for your skin. You know, there's a huge opportunity there to turn your marketing into something that's really meaningful for you and for your customers.
Good points. Excellent points. Well, Christy, thank you so much for sharing from your background and your experience. Christy Strzok, author of Passion, Plan, Profit, 12 Simple Steps to Convert Your Passion into a Solid Business. Christy, what's your website address? Where can we go to get more information?
It is www.clarity2business, so the word clarity and the word T-O and then business.com.
Great. Thank you so much for being with us today. ClarityTOBusiness.com, ClarityToBusiness.com, Christy Strzok, author of Passion, Plan, Profit. Thank you so much for joining, Christy. Next week, I'm excited to tell you that we've got Mark Warnke. He's the author of Options, Not Obligations, and that is a fantastic book that talks about how to enrich your personal life by rethinking your financial life. How great. I didn't plan that, but it sounds like the perfect follow-up for today's show. That's next week, right here on Indie Business Radio. I will see you then. In the meantime, enjoy your life, build your business, and have your way.
You're listening to GlobalTalkRadio.com.